Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
You can conserve in your personal life, but for your business, that's not really an option. You need power to run a business.
That's Susan Wellsand, also known as the Chili Woman. Thanks to a 5.2 kilowatt array of solar panels, she's able to run every aspect of her business using the power of the sun. The guys at Bread and Roses Gardens are back. They've watched as a pile of old mulch has transformed into an elaborate fungal network that's a hotspot for morels and oyster mushrooms. Those stories about farmers letting Mother Nature do the heavy lifting for them. And in the kitchen, Chef Daniel Orr makes two salads featuring one of the first veggies to pop up in any spring garden, asparagus. Anna Coogan is here sitting in for Lou Ann Johnson. She's got the latest in food news for us.
Recent rains and cold weather have kept farmers across Indiana from planting their crops. Farmer Tom Hackman grows soybeans, corn, and a variety of vegetables on 1,500 acres in Jackson and Washington counties. He says the season looked like it would be fairly normal, but then the rain started and did not stop. Some of his farmland is now covered with several inches of water. He and other farmers around the state want to get planting so the crops, especially corn, have plenty of time to mature before next fall. But if farmers put seeds in the ground while the ground is still cold and wet, those seeds could start to rot, ruining their chance of producing. There is another chance of rain for much of the state this weekend, but farmers hope the ground will start to dry out early next week. Chicago's fast food and retail workers went on strike this week for higher wages, following in the footsteps of the New York City fast food workers who did the same thing 20 days earlier. The Fight for 15 campaign is named for its goal of securing wages of $15 per hour for workers. It included employees from McDonald's, Subway, Dunkin' Donuts, and Whole Foods, among others. Beginning at 5:30 a.m., workers walked out of several McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts locations in downtown Chicago's Loop area. Impacts of the strike on the operations of retail and fast food outlets have been minimal. The Chicago Tribune reports that despite a few worker walkouts, downtown restaurants remain open with business as usual. And bad news for Big Soda this week. A new study has found a link between soda and type 2 diabetes, just as Coca-Cola comes under fire for lobbying to protect sugary treats under SNAP benefits. Researchers at Imperial College London found that those who consumed 12 ounces of a sugar-sweetened beverage daily were 18% more likely to develop diabetes over a 16-year period. That's even after allowing for other factors that increase one's risk, like age, BMI, and calorie intake. Meanwhile, at a Coca-Cola stockholder meeting Wednesday, conservative shareholders decried the company's efforts to protect soda and candy under SNAP benefits. According to National Center for Public Policy Research Executive Director David Almasi, taxpayers shouldn't be shouldering the cost of Americans' unhealthy habits. The American Beverage Association responded, arguing that they oppose any measure that singles out soft drinks, saying no one food or beverage uniquely contributes to obesity. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for more news updates all week long. Just search for Earth Eats.
Speaking of Twitter, we're in the process of purging our rather extensive library, so we're running giveaways on our Twitter feed. Hop on over to Earth Eats and look for details at hashtag 200kgiveaway. We'll be featuring a different book every week. Anyway, Anna Coogan, thanks so much for coming in today.
You got it.
U.S. grocery shoppers spent nearly $60 billion last year on private store brands, which helps explain why food conglomerate Conagra recently spent $6.8 billion to buy Ralcorp, creating the biggest private label food company in the country. But as Harvest Public Media's Grant Gerlach reports, the deal also sheds light on another food industry trend, the growing influence of the country's biggest retailers.
Walking down the aisle of this Walmart store in Lincoln, Nebraska, you pass familiar brand names like Heinz, Miracle Whip, Folgers, Cheerios. Then there are names that sound, well, more generic, like Great Value. Great Value is Walmart's private label brand. The food industry doesn't call it generic anymore. Other stores have their own versions. At Kroger, there's Private Selection. Costco sells Kirkland. Almost everything at Trader Joe's seems to have their name on it, even though they're not the ones who make it. John Stanton, a food marketing professor at St. Joseph's University, says private label is sort of an anonymous industry.
I just got back from the Private Label Manufacturers Association. There was 150 companies there. I doubt you've heard the name of one of them.
But the biggest player in private label may be a company you have heard of. Omaha, Nebraska-based ConAgra is one of the largest flour millers in the country. It's also known for national food brands like Hunt's and Healthy Choice. In January, ConAgra became the largest private label food company in the country after it bought St. Louis-based Ralcorp. Why would a company with national brands want to make a big push into private label?
Private label sales for at least the last 5 years have been increasing, and it's been accelerated by the recession.
Supermarkets sold $59 billion worth of private label food last year. That's 19% of food sales and an increase of about 20% since 2007. Michael Liss, a portfolio manager with American Century Investments in Kansas City, says that growth happened while ConAgra's national brands have been stuck in neutral.
If you look at their categories that they're big in, popcorn or frozen entrees, they give them high returns on capital. They have really good market shares in a whole bunch of categories, but they're just not growing.
So the Ralcorp merger puts ConAgra at the front of a growing industry and among the biggest food companies in the country, rubbing elbows with General Mills and Dean Foods. But Mary Hendrickson, who studies food industry consolidation at the University of Missouri, says there's another trend that may be on ConAgra's mind.
You've seen Walmart move up from selling no groceries in the 1980s to, you know, somewhere between 28 and 32% of the grocery market today. That's very significant.
Following Walmart's emergence, other grocery chains began buying up competitors. Hendrickson says concentration has been faster in the grocery industry than any other part of the food system.
What we've seen is a very high consolidation, around close to 50% among the top four grocers.
Those top four are Walmart, Kroger, Safeway, and SuperValu. And as they've grown, they've flipped the way food processors and food retailers do business. In the past, Hendrickson says, companies like ConAgra used the strength of their national brands as leverage with grocery stores.
They've spent a lot of money making sure that people want those brands, right? You go into a grocery store that doesn't have those particular brands, and you might say, I don't want to shop here anymore.
But as grocery chains control more shelf space and grow their private label brands, they gain more clout. John Stanton gives an example from the United Kingdom where he says the private label trend is farther along than in the U.S.
People come in and say, I'd like to sell you my cereal. And the retailer says, well, let me tell you how much we're going to pay for it. And they say, well, that's too little. And they say, go sell it to someone else then.
Of course, for Walmart and other large chains, the goal is to keep costs down and prices low for consumers. But the savings have to come from somewhere. Stanton says the ripple effects can reach all the way back to the farm.
The private label people are going to try and squeeze the farmers because they need to come in at a lower price. And the branded people are going to squeeze the farmers because the private label people are coming in at a lower price.
As food companies like ConAgra feel the squeeze, they're looking for new ways to keep up, like private label foods. As investment manager Michael Liss says, they're running hard to stay in place. I'm Grant Gerlach, Harvest Public Media.
Read and listen to more stories from the reporting team at Harvest Public Media on their website, harvestpublicmedia.org.
Juicy baby.
We love talking about mushroom hunting, especially this time of year. It's a great way to enjoy early spring and perhaps pick something delicious and unique for tonight's dinner. But some folks are lucky enough not to have to do any hunting at all.
Okay, you said it smells like mushrooms?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Smell that. It just smells like, I don't know, like a... it smells like oyster mushrooms, actually. I think it probably is. There's a lot of oysters
Oh, yeah.
around here.
The guys of Bread and Roses Gardens are back with us today. Several weeks ago, they were sheet mulching and planting goji berries on their expansive plot of land just outside Bloomington, Indiana. Salem Willard and Jonas Carpenter can attest to the fact that it takes a lot of wood chips to rebuild soil. So what happens to all the excess mulch? Turns out if you basically just leave it alone, fungal networks, or mycelium, will break down the wood and turn it into nutrient-rich black gold that Willard then applies to the plants.
When you have soil like this with that much mycelium and that much humus there, I mean, this was all wood chips 2 years ago. So when you have soil like this, you don't have to worry about drought because you can feel how wet it is. Like, it just absorbs moisture.
Is this the thread?
That's mycelium.
Yeah. This is mycelium?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is probably oyster mushrooms and morels, pretty much. And some other mystery mushrooms, I don't really know. But all kinds pop up here in the spring and fall, especially when it's really wet.
And you're crediting this with all the mulching that you guys did.
That is mulch.
That is just mulch.
That is just wood chip. That's 2 years of breaking down, if not a little less.
So yeah, you can see it.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Clinging to the wood chips and it's literally just eating the wood chips. It's the only fungi are the only things that can break down wood. They can break down lignin. So without them, we wouldn't be here. we'd be buried in tons and tons and hundreds of feet of wood debris.
Another way Willard and Carpenter are letting Mother Nature do the heavy lifting is with their 4 solar panels. This 720-watt system is the only thing keeping the lights on.
The property here has no ability to connect to the grid because the power lines stop about half a mile up the road. So
the small setup collects enough energy to charge their computers and phones and to run the radio.
We run lights. During the summer, there's enough sun out. We can run a little mini fridge, like a dorm fridge.
I notice everything you're saying has nothing to do with farm work. Do you not use any motorized farm equipment?
No, not at all. No. The only things that work-wise, battery-powered drills, I can charge those really effectively. I mean, we just generally don't have that many needs for electricity. I mean, a part of what we're trying to do in terms of not just our sustainable farming practices is we're also just trying to cut down on our footprint in general. So
there have been times when the panels haven't collected enough energy and they've been stuck in the dark, literally.
We went about 4 days without electricity.
Really?
And you just use candles and go to bed a little earlier.
Yeah, I was out of town for that, thankfully.
I was comfy with my candles and wood stove fired high, so.
Check out photos of Bread and Roses Gardens on our website, eartheats.org. The array of solar panels at Susan Wellsand's farm dwarfs Willard's and Carpenter's setup. Before she installed the massive panels, the power used for her business was lumped in with her home energy bill.
And that was all tied to my house meter, which made it awkward to figure out utilities for taxes and everything. And also the wiring was not good. And I always wanted to rewire it. But the cost was so prohibitive. we'll put that on the back burner. But while we were doing the panels, that was the opportunity to have it done.
These are not small solar panels. No. You've got 2 gigantic towers of solar panels. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 20?
Mm-hmm. 20? Yeah. It's 5.2 kilowatt array.
Her property had been heavily wooded until a tornado came through in May 2011 and uprooted several large trees.
I've never seen this guy back here. This was real shocking. And these were like big old growth trees here that kind of disappeared. And also I had trees all the way along there that went away, and then trees down this side. So I lost, like, trees on 3 sides.
Debris is still stacked in piles around the farm, and she says she's saving the wood from the big trees to make furniture. With the help of a tax credit for small businesses and a lot of penny pitching, she was able to install the solar panels and rewire the greenhouses in late 2012.
I visited her on a cloudy and chilly day, which is fairly typical for this time of year. The chili plants need temperatures around 85, 90 degrees, so she's running heat almost constantly on days like this.
You can conserve in your personal life, but for your business, that's not really an option. You need power to run a business.
This is my little greenhouse.
We peer through the windows to see thousands and thousands of germinating seeds.
And I don't let anyone go in here except the greenhouse inspector. But
you can take a peek.
Shipping plants is such a highly regulated activity that she's fanatical about keeping contamination out of her greenhouses. She pulls out her cell phone to check the levels from the solar panels.
You can kind of see even today, even though it's a cloudy day, I'm like at half power. So there's enough sun breaking through the cloud cover. And if we go back to February,
whoa,
you can see the difference. See those sunny days?
30K, and that's enough to power, you said, this greenhouse and that one over there?
It should be. It should be more than enough. I said this will be the year we find out. I can just see it, just a little bit of sun came out. I bet they'll spike right up.
While she can sit back and let the sun power her farm, that's about the only aspect of her business that's hands-off. As she sows the 1,600 varieties of chili plants, she takes meticulous notes to keep track of everything once the orders start coming in. Agricultural regulations require that she ship the plants in May and June only, so she's preparing for a busy couple of months.
If I'm selling a lot of something I didn't expect, I say, oh, I better go. So somewhere like I'll be sowing more burning bush because that hasn't sold very well in the last couple of years. And every order, people want a burning bush plant. So I'm like, okay. If I didn't have to keep track of all this, it would go a lot faster. And if I only grew a few varieties, it would be so easy. You know, there's a reason that there's not a lot of people doing this.
Wellsand's wish for spring?
I'm hoping for more sun.
You are.
Any sunny day is a good day.
See photos of the chili woman, Susan Wellsand, and her impressive solar panels on our website, eartheats.org.
I can see clearly now, rain has gone.
Coming up, we're cooking some asparagus on the grill.
Now, a lot of people, they want to marinate them beforehand, and all that does is that oil and marinade drips off and, you know, you have fire streaming up over your asparagus and it's burning. And
so Chef Daniel Orr suggests marinating the asparagus after they've been grilled. More tips and two great recipes coming up.
I think I can make it now, all the pain has gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here's the rainbow.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at TouchstoneWellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Every week, we speak with authors who've written everything from cookbooks to food history books, and we feature snippets of those interviews here on the program. Our book today is Eat Your Roses by Denise Schreiber.
It's a cookbook with tips for cultivating an edible flower garden. Her interest in snacking on flowers started way back when she was a kid.
And me and the little boy next door would actually kind of chew on them, and, you know, you make mud pies, and like, here, eat this flower. It's a wonder I survived childhood.
Here's 1 minute with Denise Schreiber, where she talks about cooking nasturtiums.
Nasturtiums actually have quite a peppery flavor to them. The leaves are edible, the stems are edible, the flowers are edible, and we've done two dishes that are really popular with them. One is the recipe in the book for the roasted red pepper soup. And you can use jarred roasted red peppers, and you just drain them. And you add your tomato juice and your vegetable juice and puree it. Then add the shredded nasturtiums. Nasturtiums have to be added at the last moment. They don't have any flavor when they're dried, and you get the bite of the nasturtium leaves when you add them at the last minute, so the flavor isn't destroyed. That's one of the most popular dishes. The other was something we did last year at our food fest. We marinated some pork butts, and we did a roasted red pepper coulis with it and added the nasturtiums. They were just mini pork sliders, and we ran out of them. They were so popular. Thanks a lot, Annie.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Read more about edible flowers from Denise Schreiber on our website and find plenty of other interviews with authors, chefs, and food activists. EarthEats.org. Asparagus is one of the first vegetables to pop up in the garden in the springtime. They grow haphazardly all over the garden. Two stalks here, another one over there.
And it's always exciting to see those first little tips coming up. And it's amazing how they grow, because one day they'll be nothing, and the next day there'll be all these little asparagus spears coming up. One of my old managers, when the first time she saw them growing, she said, "I thought they grew in bunches." Because she'd never seen them growing, so she thought they grew just like they did in the supermarket, you know, so.
with a rubber band around them and everything.
Another thing that people don't know is that the Romans actually used to candy asparagus, and asparagus ice cream has been a popular ice cream even in early America. And they would make asparagus syrup and pour that over snow or make an ice cream out of it, and it was enjoyed as a sweet.
No matter how you're planning to use your asparagus, here's a tip for finding the tender part. Just gently bend the stalk until it snaps. Use the top part in your cooking, but don't throw away the tougher bottom half. You can turn those into a soup. Just add some cream, seasonings of your choice, and blend. We'd love to hear your favorite asparagus recipes. Email us, eartheats@gmail.com.
All right, so what we're going to do today is we're going to do a very, very simple asparagus dish. I've just simply thrown these on the grill. Now, a lot of people, they want to marinate them beforehand, and all that does is that oil and marinade drips off, and, you know, you have fire streaming up over your asparagus, and it's burning, and, you know, so I always grill my vegetables plain or dry, and then marinate them afterward, and we're going to cook them until they just start to blister and have a little caramelization around the edges.
You know, that's always my problem. When I'm preparing asparagus, I overcook and then they become a little bit mushy and I lose that great crispness.
Well, this is a perfect way to do it, because once they're on the grill, you can't really leave them. So it's not like throwing them in water and boiling them, and then they become almost fibrous and mushy. All right, so you hear it kind of snapping and crackling, and that's really all there is to it. I'm just going to pull that off and make a little salad out of it. I've got a portobello cap here that I've grilled. I'm just going to stack these guys up on top of that portobello. And then, you know, use your favorite vinaigrettes, put that around, kind of frame it. I'm going to marinate the asparagus with a little lemon vinaigrette, which is just simply one part lemon juice to two parts olive oil, and then seasoned with salt and pepper. So simple as that. And then I've got some basil oil. Okay, and I'm just going to serve that with a little wedge of grapefruit that we can squeeze on top of it, and that's going to really make all the flavors pop.
And the result was a beautiful asparagus and portobello salad with a splash of color from some purple violet flowers sprinkled on top, making this recipe just that much more seasonal. Asparagus and mushrooms make for good plate mates. Asparagus also plays well with tomato plants in your garden. Tomato plants repel the asparagus beetle.
Thank you.
Here's another take on asparagus salad. All the ingredients in this recipe are very local. Asparagus, potatoes, and greens from Daniel's garden, eggs from local farmer Gretchen Marks, and a hunk of goat cheese from Capriole Farms in Greenville, Indiana.
Well, this just kind of shows that, you know, being a chef is more about ingredients than anything else, and we're going to just use those few ingredients that we pulled up today. We've got about 6 or 8 beautiful little new potatoes. Cut these into some little pieces. Got some of those nice lettuces out of the garden. Then we've got these fun, great big, little bit overgrown asparagus. And we're going to snap those. And then we've got this nice Wabash cannonball, which is goat cheese from Judy Shad down at Capriole Farms. We're using a little bit of olive oil in a nonstick pan. And we're going to cook some of these great eggs from Gretchen's. Just cover them with a plate. And what that's going to do is allow them to cook very gently and kind of be sheared eggs. At the same time, I've got my potatoes cooking over here, some salted water.
In with the asparagus?
In with the asparagus, right in that same water with the potatoes. Turn off our eggs. And I'm leaving both the potatoes and the asparagus a little bit crunchy. When they're this fresh, I think that's the best way to enjoy them. Put those right on top of the lettuce, kind of wilting it. I cut up some of Judy's cheese to put around. Okay, and we're just going to drizzle a little good extra virgin olive oil, and a little bit of your favorite vinegar. Okay, and that, and some nice crusty bread.
That's gorgeous. Let's eat.
Yeah, let's go bring it outside. Okay, I'll get some. Now, when you're eating this, I've left these kind of sunny-side-up eggs, so you break the yolk, and that's kind of your dipping sauce.
This here's got to be one of my all-time favorite recipes, and it's just so simple. Find the recipe at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Ben Alford, Aabon Binder, Jonas Carpenter, Sarah Gordon, Liz Leslie, Susan Wellsand, Salem Willard, and the entire team at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness Massage and Yoga, 812-337-3529 or 33RELAX. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Thank you for listening. Till next week, happy eating. I'm Annie Corrigan.